everybody. Nice to have you with us. This is Henrik. Thanks for tuning in. I hope you're doing well. RedIceCreations.com is the website. Today we have a return visit by Cliff High. And as you might know, he, together with George developed the WebBot project in the late 1990s. A web spider that originally was designed to predict stock market trends, eventually developed into something quite different. And now it's claimed to be able to predict future events by tracking keywords on the web. We have not as much predictions perhaps on our plate today, but we do have a slew of other topics lined up for you guys, like Bitcoin, Comet Ison, and later Cliff will get us into the origin stories of the Numo, as retold by the Dogon tribe, but we'll begin to discuss bandwidth caps. Welcome back, Cliff. Good to talk to you again. Hope you've been okay and well since we last spoke.
I've been doing very well. We're getting better here, so improvement is good.
Well, excellent, excellent. Well, now that the mass arrests have cleared the path for all good people and the planet have been cleansed of the elites of the world, the bad guys are in jail, and we are finally on our way towards a peaceful and voluntary society without a parasitical government that have joined with the corporate monopolist fascists, and we are free to do our business as we please without being forced to give away what we've made in the form of taxes. It's great, isn't it? I hope you're enjoying the state of the world as much as I am, Cliff.
Oh, yes, this, Mundo Perfecto is just gorgeous.
Well, it's good times. It's good times as usual, of course. But yeah, we the world is ticking along as usual, I guess. I mean, things are certainly ramping up. We're getting more of the same, but not much difference.
No, I would disagree. There have been some very large differences that have occurred over the last, say, 14 or 15 months. Many of them are under the table at the moment. Some are coming forth in the, you know, in the sense of Bitcoin and some of the stuff going on there. But also there have been huge strategic shifts that have culminated in like the last, I want to say, 3 or 4 days with some very dramatic realignments. As an instance, China has announced it's not going to accumulate U.S. dollar debt anymore. So basically, it's saying we're done buying U.S. treasuries, which is also kind of a sign saying they're going to convert them into resources as rapidly as they can or sell them off. So there's been a strategic shift there. We also have a new setup going on now where the BRICS countries, Brazil, Russia, India, and China, have set up an alternative system to the Bank of International Settlements and set up an alternative to the IMF at the same time. And they're getting out of what's known as the SWIFT system, so which is this dollar-denominated American-controlled or COBOL-controlled money transfer system. Mm-hmm. And so these two items alone basically are final nails in the coffin of the American empire. And it can't be undone. There's nothing for it anymore. I mean, these are accomplished facts now that the countries are doing this. And so as they go forward, resource plundering nature of the Federal Reserve and the Zionist bankers is indeed in the process of waning. And it literally at this point is a matter of time. I actually am very satisfied. I don't want to say complacent or anything, but I'm satisfied that we have indeed crossed the chasm in terms of the adoption of those technologies that will kill the Fed and Zionist international banking as it exists today and do away with it entirely. There's no need for it.
Interesting. Okay, well, that's certainly something we need to talk more about. As the Fed then goes down, will it take America with it, or will that stand?
Boy, that's a real good question. In the case of we have a number of things going on here. I'm not particularly disturbed by the idea of the American empire dying. I'm actually personally rather in favor of this because it's not my empire. I didn't participate willingly in any way. Those members of my family that were in the military that supported it did so without knowing what they were really involved with, this corporatocracy. So I'm ill-disposed towards it. It'll be fine when it's gone. Our problem here in the United States is going to be that the sheeple will react very, very, very badly, because what's going to occur is that these people that have never, ever given a consideration to things like how money works or what their government truly is, and they don't really analyze that. Let's say that they're just not living a analytical life. You know, they're self-unaware. These individuals will be hit by a series of events that will shock them, and their reaction will be to become violent, go into denial, and attempt to do away with the what they perceive of as the people that are perpetrating this on them. That is to say, the people giving them the news. And so it won't be a good time for the American populace. It's something we've got to go through. They've been dumbing us down since the 30s with the Department of No Education, where they school you, but they don't educate you. And this there have been a number of anti-trends, if you will, that have been occurring within our populace that say that those control mechanisms that have been in place for decades now are waning in their effectiveness and are being broken. Some of these trends I can cite as glaringly obvious anti-mainstream trends. So, for instance, the mainstream thrust in America, in one instance, is to fat, dumb, and happy. They want you eating the fast foods, and so you're going to be fat. They want you attending public schools, so you'll be dumb. And they want you taking all of their chemicals, so you'll be happy and a complacent slave. And in response to this, we see many separate little threads that are starting to come together. So, for instance, we now see among the youth an extreme calisthenics move that's breaking out all over the United States. This is a direct anti-wave to the fat aspect of it. These people are primarily, they're led by vegans and vegetarians that are fierce about it and very insistent. And this is not CrossFit. This is not any kind of a commercial operation. It's not being run by anyone. It's not a promotional wave by any kind of an organization. It's just happening in schoolyards and playgrounds and school gyms and anywhere where you can get hold of a couple of bars or rings or whatever to do your calisthenics work. It's happening all over our country in small numbers, I grant you, probably less than 1% of the sub 25-year-old male population is involved, and maybe 0.01% of the female population. But there is a critical mass that's already grown there. Now they're starting to see an industry in a sense of support techniques develop around it. And so I know it's going to grow. We also have an anti-dumb movement going on here with the burgeoning effort for people to put entire course curriculum of materium practicum, that is to say, actual practical knowledge, online and organize self-organizing classes. So we're seeing a move where young people want to know, for instance, shop skills, everything from how to change a tire to how to operate a metal working machine. And they are actually out recruiting on their own old farts like myself that know how to do this. They sit us in front of videos with our tools, and then they put this stuff up on YouTube, and whole conversations, if you will, are emerging around these kind of things. And so there's been this from the young, a draw, if you will, from the young population through the old population, extracting knowledge, probably in a desperate attempt to get that knowledge before it fades. But nonetheless, it's occurring, and it is truly an anti-dumb kind of a movement, because the people involved, most of them, are failures within our schooling system. They're dropouts. They want to be educated. They don't want to be schooled. For many reasons, they don't fit in, et cetera. But these are the people that are leading that particular anti-dumb movement. And we also, of course, see the anti-happy movement among the young as well, where many of the sub 25-year-olds are, they're not only anti-chemical in the form of they won't take your Prozac or other mind-altering antidepressants, but they're also getting to the point where they won't handle specific kinds of plastics because they know that there's, you know, pseudoestrogens that transfer. Sure. They won't touch specific kinds of receipts. Mm. They're demanding different kinds of packaging. Again, an anti-trend wave. So in that sense, I think that I think powers that be have got a real world of hurt heading their way. I think they know it, and it's going to be really visible this year. It's starting so now. We're seeing it with the extreme reaction to things like Bitcoin and some of the other changes that are occurring outside of the American empire. And we're seeing the man, you know, whoever it is that's got his hands up Obama's butt, along with all the other boners and boneheads in Congress pulling their strings. These individuals are tweaking real hard on the minion class and causing these people to be really, really extra dumb and stupid at the moment. And I think it's from the tension and the stress of it all. And I think that whoever has their hands up the butts of the politicians is indeed very much aware that the tide has turned and that it's no longer controllable. It's breaking out in too many different ways and too many different areas, and it's all synergistic. So, for instance, what I'm waiting for is for the powers that be to come on out and try the old line of, terrorist networks are forming.
Sure.
And extreme calisthenics people are merging with organic foodists and people who want to give you a GED-level shop class to form extreme social terrorists or something, you know. I mean, they're going to have to try and do something to stop this synergistic blend that's occurring.
Well, that's interesting. I wanted to ask you a little bit more about Bitcoin later. You've been following sure. that, and I've been way too lazy, actually, on that end of things, and I do want to try to understand it a bit more and get into it. But information as a liberating force, that's, you know, one of the positive upswings of our time, I think. It's this kind of, DIY culture, do-it-yourself, and knowledge moving away from, John Dewey's Rockefeller-sponsored school system. It's a very good idea. But you talked about anger, and here is where I think things are get interesting. I mean, the question is where this will take if you look at the United States specifically, as the control mechanism begins to falter. I see also a new infrastructure and a lot of opportunists getting on the bandwagon to steer America down another political system that have been, plaguing other parts of the world in authoritarian measure. I mean, I'm talking more directly about a socialist revolution. Is that where things is going to go, or is it going to move towards a true, a freedom-based liberating system, do you think?
I don't think we're going to get I think you're correct. I think there are people that want to steer us down a path that has a couple of variants. On one side of the coin is the socialist revolution. On the other side is a far-right totalitarian revolution, if you will. Where we just segue right into dictatorship. I think that path is very short. It's very steep. There's a lot of hazards on both sides of it. And the demographics are not with the people that are attempting to do this. We are not Germany in the 30s. It won't happen here the way it happened there. We're not Italy. We're not any of the other countries that have ever adopted fascism in an open fashion. And so totalitarian control works in the United States at a certain level in certain areas and does not exist in other areas and becomes almost impossible to obtain in vast regions of the country. So, for instance, if we look at the demographics, we find out that we can't be controlled the way the Germans were because we can't be isolated the way they were into the small, a very smallish, easily patrolled and garrisoned country. We have a very large nation here. 200 plus million of us live in the eastern third. Yeah. That's where all of the fascist activity is actually taking place. Of our population, 50% lives in 146 out of 3,000 counties. In some counties, we have a very low population. Out in the West, and in some areas of the South and in other strategic areas, I would suggest that the majority of the population is armed. Now, that's not saying the majority of Americans own guns, although that may indeed be the case for all I know. But I know that there are regions in which the historical tradition is such that we recognize that maintaining arms is the first, last, and only response to a government out of control. And this maintenance of arms is what has kept the government at bay within this nation, plus the size, plus the demographics, and now the financing. And so what I see going on at the moment is a race towards a precipice. And the idea is that the powers that be, the powers that were, are attempting to push us to a finite state of control where they will feel comfortable before certain events occur, which they know are occurring, which are racing alongside of them. And these events have to do basically with the implosion of their control system, bearing in mind that the control system for the United States depends on money. You remove money and all of the stooges that are the powers that be mouthpieces, all of the nightly news guys, all of these other individuals will be cast out one way or another if they're not supported in a lavish lifestyle. If we don't have that pinnacle of support, the pyramid flattens out very rapidly. And without those kind of dollars, we will have people on TV actually saying things coming close to the truth. Such a thing will not be good for the powers that be. Without the money, we have an immediate situation with the real low-level enforcement class, the thugs, the Goombas of the elite, okay? Because right. These individuals need to be paid on a month-to-month basis, and they have their own levels of obligations, and that's where the first cracks are going to appear. Now, the high-end media types, they may hang on for a few months after the money dries up because they have their own set of resources. But the police are going to defect, the army's going to defect. Once the money is no longer there, it will be a very short period of time before the guy on the street says, no, I got to go and get food for my kids today. I'm not going to sit here and break skulls for Exxon or Shell or whoever it is that needs the assistance at the moment, right? Some major oil company or bank or something. And that's really what it's going to come down to. Plus, at the same time, we have the true breakout of the independent media, and it's getting rather fierce. Now, I'm convinced that we've won because there are certain mathematics involved with technologies as well as social progress. And when we cross the 3% level in the nation, which we have, of people that are now awake and aware, that brings us up to 1% of the population that is awake and aware, that is fiercely dedicated to that and will not be silenced. So they can kill me, but they can't shut me up. They cannot defeat me. In fact, the only thing that can be done to me is to make me a martyr. Not a good situation for the powers that be. And there are thousands of people like me. There's thousands of internet radio shows. There's many that are getting really good press. And things are just turning for the powers that be in a very ugly fashion for them. Now, I grant you, they want that ugliness within the United States to come back to us. They want to garrison us. Just like, you know, the Native Americans say, if your friends call you crazy for thinking that they're going to come and throw you into FEMA camps and concentration camps, bear in mind that's what they did to the 30 million Indians. Native Americans, that is to say the ones they didn't kill. So that's what government does. Now, I don't think it'll be effective because government is very weak at the moment in these United States.
Right.
And the corporation that is this United States that was created in 1871, I believe, by the 44th Congress illegally, I think it's collapsing, and that its mainstay is money, and money is fleeing for fiat currencies as fast as everybody is able to make it occur. And it doesn't matter what currency it is, everybody's getting out of central bank controlled currencies as rapidly as they can. This being the case, that is the linchpin for propping up the powers that be. When the banks shut down and the police aren't paid and the fire people aren't paid and the military isn't paid, are they really going to go on out and want to protect Rockefeller?
Sure.
And these people, I don't think so. Yeah. You know, when the Secret Service hasn't been paid in 3 months, are they going to give a rat's ass about protecting Cheney? No, I don't think so. I think they'll shoot him and take what they can out of his house.
What do you think will replace that means of exchange? Or, I mean, how will this, because if you think about how this will, topple down, then in that regard, there's always going to be something that replaces this, right?
And it's already replacing it now.
Right?
It's already replacing it now. That's why I'm so complacent about all of this, is because, A, we've had an idea. Let me back up and say that in the mid-80s, I worked for this company called OSP, Other Service Provider, for the telephony industry. And I was there when we converted the analog phone system nationally to digital. And I saw when it first started happening, I saw a digital revolution. Late 70s, I got my first PC because I knew PCs were going to change the planet. When I could, I got into the telephony because I saw that PCs and telephony were bound to be joined together. And indeed, when I was there at the digital signal switching seven protocols and that development that led to the billing and rating channels and the ability to do basically all the internet stuff, I knew that we were in the process of reinventing ourselves as a species. Now, we have, after that, gone ahead and reinvented all of our analog world into the digital. We reinvented mail, and we call it email, and it's better, cheaper, faster, more dispersed, et cetera. It's also more of a pain in the ass because you can get, junk mail easier and so on. But nonetheless, the good is certainly there. We've reinvented everything: auctions, shopping, healthcare, health resources, anything on the that we could digitize and put on the internet has been done so in such a huge, rapid fashion that our lives have been transformed in, what, 14, 15, 18 years? During that period of time, we have been stymied in redeveloping one key element, and that is currency. If you'll notice, all of the things we've done, the Skype phone call that is allowing us to communicate literally around half of the planet, is done on a peer-to-peer basis, the voice over IP. Our entire email system, peer-to-peer, yeah, it gets through routers and is relayed through email servers, but basically it's point-to-point. And so what we've done is we've flattened everything out, taken the middlemen out of everything except for money. And that's because the banking industry in the Western planet was so strongly established. Now they're breaking down. And so we've replaced them with Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies. And these cryptocurrencies are not only storehouses of wealth, they are also mediums of exchange that cost you virtually nothing to do that exchange. So there's a graphic over at Zero Hedge today that illustrates the case. If I'm sitting here in the western half of the Washington state freezing my butt off, as we are now, because it's about minus 2 degrees here.
Wow. It's cold.
Yeah. You know, cold for us, yeah. And so, you know, if I'm sitting here freezing and I want to go to warm, sunny Spain and rent a house and I need to put down $1,000 deposit, there would be three ways of getting that $1,000 there. If I attempted to do a wire transfer and my bank permitted it, it might cost me between $80 and $200 to wire $1,000 over to Spain. If I use a credit card, I would have the cost of the transfer, which would be about $50, but I would also have additional charges, $15, $20, or $30, depending on how long it takes me to pay it back.
Yeah.
But if I do it by Bitcoin, it may cost as much as $10 or $12 or $15, but it's certainly going to cost at least 6 or 8 cents. And so you see the effectiveness, and we eliminate the tracking, we eliminate the controls. And just the other day, one of our major banking chains here says, nope, we're not going to do any more wire transfers, which was fundamentally a way of instituting capital controls on our country. And I think they're headed for a bail-in. That was in one of my reports, by the way. In our August report, I talked about the possibility of that. They won't call it that. They're going to call it a service fee.
Sure.
And it'll be a payment for banking services, backbone support kind of things that we theoretically don't see and don't pay for now. And that'll be their rationale. But I think they're going to pull a Cyprus on us and try and seize everybody's bank accounts.
Well, that's not going to go down well, though.
No, I'm certain of that. But in the meantime, I don't want to have more than, you know, $5 or $10 in my bank account because I'm certain it's coming.
Yeah, well, exactly. I mean, at the end of it, I mean, that's what we're talking about. It's people have their money in this system that has been established by the cooperation between government and the corporate monopoly, if you will, and people have to find alternative measures for that. But as you're talking about the internet overall, there is a new kind of thing on the horizon there. I wanted to ask you a little bit about it, if you know anything about it. Basically, internet caps or bandwidth caps, I guess is the correct term. Australia had already enforced it in some areas. There are tests, I know, right now in the U.S., in like Georgia, South Carolina, Florida, too, I believe. And this is a way, an attempt, they're trying to kind of shut down the internet in piecemeal, you know, strangling the access slowly. They're doing this in a very slow manner. In some areas, I know as well, there's very few operators or ISP available. They have monopoly in some areas. You can like only get Comcast and stuff like that. So there isn't much option. But what is happening is what they're trying to do later on with Agenda 21 with the rationing of electricity, but it's happening with bandwidth. And it feels like that's difficult area right there.
It's tricky because I've looked at the Agenda 21 with the rationing of power throughout the planet and their, you know, rationales for basically a socialist agenda for the planet as a whole. And now with Obama having signed certain UN treaties that supersede our constitution, theoretically, we're going to get in a very tricky area. And I know that they're strangling the bandwidth in a lot of areas. You'll notice that most of these that are getting hit demographically share certain characteristics. And I'd rather not go into some of the darker aspects of it because I'm not sure that that's where they're headed. But there are some things that are quite specific. They are strangling bandwidth in areas that are not high-intensity points for internet sales,
yep,
or for, if you will, corporate-to-corporate transfers. Okay, so you notice they're not strangling bandwidth in Manhattan.
Exactly.
Okay, yep. But they are in regions of the South that could be considered ghettoized. And this is very curious as to how and why they're going about this. It's even so specific in terms of how it's being implemented that it goes down to, they're doing it at the ISP level, but it goes down to the area where a university has full bandwidth access, and actually across the road, people in an apartment are in strangulation zone. So it's, and they're actually having to now, the guys in this apartment, I happen to know one of the people that lives in this particular apartment, and he sent me an email about this. He said what they've done is they've set up a, what they're called a wild willy or a piggy tail. And it's this coiled Wi-Fi antenna thing that boosts local Wi-Fi signals. And so they're piggybacking off of free Wi-Fi that's running on the far side of the campus. And that's their only way of getting any kind of access at all. So it's very curious. It is specific. It's not some kind of a coincidence. It's part of, I think, the Agenda 21 or the Common Core or any of these other creeping control mechanisms. And whether you call them communist, socialist, fascist, dictatorial, it really doesn't matter.
Same thing.
Same thing. Comes down to totalitarianism, and whatever is the ideology on the other side of the gun is immaterial to me, and it's moot to all of us.
Absolutely right. By the way, I want to mention that as well, because it's a good point. You talked about basically the excuse is that there's congestion and everything else. I mean, and I read some actually more or less press releases by Comcast on this, and they try to argue, obviously, that, oh, no, it's to stop piracy and everything like that. But if you do any kind of, you know, work online and sending video files or whatever, you reach that, limit fairly quick each month. But the fact is it has nothing to do with congestion, because I know that after they upgraded to their, DOCSIS technology, which is basically the data over, cable service interface specification, they call it. And it's like in generation 3 or something like that. Now, it actually has solved that problem and issue a long, long time ago. And there's even other companies that actually lays down new cables on top of the existing ones. So there's plenty of bandwidth to go around. So that's not the issue. This is really about limiting the access and beginning that kind of, mental space for people that they're going to start limiting their access to the web. It's really horrible.
Yeah, exactly. I agree with you. They're trying to alter the mental space to basically, and they're doing it with our power as well. We've had power flickering here going on and off from Maine's power for no particular reason, no storms in the area, any of this kind of thing. And I'm pretty sure we're going to get to the point where, we'll have regional brownouts and regional blackouts as a form of control. You know, if the area in the far south gets out of hand because the food isn't there, the food stamp system crashes or is taken down or limited or whatever, and they have riots that they don't particularly want, they'll just brown out the area and they'll shut down the social networking that allows the people to work around and so on. Now, the real problem for the powers that be is that there is a counterwave. Every single one of these things has a really nice counterwave. And so, yeah, they've been limiting the bandwidth on all of this. And we've got people developing really effective long-distance Wi-Fi draw antennas. We've also got people that are doing their own peer-to-peer internet system just by being able to piggyback over the phone system and knowing IP addresses. And they're setting up their own DNS routers or DNS servers that are not part of the internet. I mean, they're not on an official server anywhere. They're on a black web server that itself wouldn't even have an IP address. It's just a dial-in piggyback. So it's just real interesting. The humans are responding to this in those areas where they're trapped and they can't get out. There's still smart people everywhere. And with the, as you say, the do-it-yourself culture, which I think of as the hack and mod culture.
Yeah.
You know, you get into modifications on some of this stuff. That's where the real power is. And you start looking at, I knew the powers that be were in real trouble when about 3 or 4 years ago, I came across this video, just an obscure little video on YouTube, that showed this 13-year-old kid with a brand new toy. And I even forget what kind of toy it was, but it was some kind of an electronic toy that he had. And he had just literally set up his camera, started talking, and took the thing out of the box and disassembled it and started hacking and modifying right and left, drilling in the plastic and taking his taking a lighter to solder little bits of plastic on it and really improved the thing in about 15 or 20 minutes. And so I knew that the hack and the mod culture had taken off. And that's the next evolution after the do-it-yourself. And we've got Arduino coming out, which is the next, which is basically open source hardware.
Right. 3D printers. There's a lot of interesting stuff coming online right now. Yeah.
Yeah. we look at these technologies, and they're operating at a peer-to-peer, no middlemen, no central authorities, very few distribution places. This is all off of what I'd called years and years and years ago SOCs, self-organizing collectives. People drift in and out of them, supply their, contribute, get what they need from them, may last in some of them for years, maybe they're momentarily as they move on to other interests, but the SOC itself continues to grow and spread, and we end up with these waves or movements. And these SOCs are now starting to combine into something like a wardrobe, and the powers that be are getting very nervous about it.
I just want to mention that before we leave the topic as well, stopthecap.com, in case people want to follow up on some of the news developments on that as well, because it might be coming to, allegedly the big providers are talking about getting it to other countries and everything else. We'll see who developed that. But, just as you say, I think that an alternative infrastructure, the hacking crowd, basically pirating access to the web, or, people coming together and laying down literally like new fiber in the ground to be able to circumvent this problem. That's the only way to go here, because the monopoly is not going to let go, and the government control of it is just relentless.
Well, they've also set themselves up technologically. They've done some really stupid moves. Recently in Seattle, they Department of Human Sacrifice went around, and their Homeland Security.
Right.
They went around and installed all of these white boxes on all of the on a lot of the intersections, and it's what's known as a meshnet, which is Wi-Fi to Wi-Fi handoff, smart box handoff, basically. Right. These little boxes sit up with the light pole areas. They're up in an intersection. You may find two or three or four of them in an intersection, depending on how much internet traffic goes through it. And the idea is that they would be able to, you would be on your cell phone, and they would be able to watch you from these boxes, which are writing on the internet as you're doing your, and they would not only be able to record your voice, actually, if you're talking to people on the street, but they would be able to record your voice going into the cell phone and be able to pick up who you're talking to, pick up that other half of the conversation, also see whatever other apps and other things you've got going into your phone. And, now, up here in Seattle, they picked the wrong place to roll this out. I understand why they did it. People on the East Coast think we're an extremely rural backwater. I mean, you think of the largest, the smallest regional capital, one reindeer town in Sweden, and that's what our area is up here. And so they picked Seattle because that's how they envision us. And what they failed to recognize was that there's a huge subculture up here towards organic food and, healthy living and all of that. And people freaked out just on the radiation levels alone. And so they had to shut them down. Nominally, theoretically, unless you walk around with an EMF meter, are you sure? I don't know. But my point is that what they're attempting to do is to control the cities with these mesh nets. Now, there's nothing so cool to a script kiddie with a piece of paper towel cardboard that has had copper pipe rolled around it, as a Wi-Fi network. And to think of a city that is gridded with a mesh of Wi-Fi networks there for the hacking, the powers that be have not got a clue as to what's awaiting them once they roll these things out. Wi-Fi is, let's face it, it's extremely invasive to the human body, and I hate this stuff. I won't have it in my house.
Yep.
It's worse than microwave. It is microwave.
It is microwave, exactly.
It is microwave, right. Let me stop and quick aside here. I used to be in the appliance repair business, and I was one of the first people in our state to attend a Amana radar range repair class when they just introduced the Amana radar ranges, which is the very first commercial microwave available in our region. And they warned us specifically to guard your NADs against all these frequencies. Mm-hmm. And one of them, of course, is the Wi-Fi frequency.
Jeez.
And so, I was warned way back in the 80s about this by going to these techie courses for my employer. Anyway, though, so we've got a situation where, I don't want to go keep going on it, but they keep making bad moves all over in terms of the control system. I don't think they have any other bright ideas, though. They look at the technology, they say, oh, we can use it to do this, but the people that are looking at that technology and are going to implement it don't consider ancillary social side effects or responses. They don't understand that, you know, you poke universe here, it's going to cause a bulge over there, and you got to worry about it. You know, the finger in the hole in the dike, and then you cause another hole to open up, kind of an effect, right? Universe responds that way, and we're seeing it happen here.
Yeah, well, what I was thought about this is if it's designed to make people, detached and lose their thinking, make people sick, then it's a great success with the smart grid that's coming in, that for sure, with the Wi-Fi.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Terrible, terrible stuff. Yeah. But of course, now we're also seeing the anti-wave. There's people that are in the United States that are making money now by sewing clothing that is anti-radiative, anti-EMF. And they have baseball caps with mesh grids that clip to the mesh grid inside your windbreaker, which clips to the mesh grid that runs down into your pants so you can ground.
This is turning into one of those, like, you know, Johnny Mnemonic kind of, you know, hacking dystopian future scenarios here, right?
It's like, you're right, especially where we are now, because the power structure is embedded here and it's reacting badly to losing power.
Jeez, wow. Well, what do you make about Bitcoin then? Just tell us a little bit about this. People are obviously for a long time now calling this a revolution and everything, but the value just keeps going up, 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 and up. Is it ever going to stop? What's going on there?
Sure, it'll actually stabilize in about 2000 and somewhere between 2036 and 2041 when the last Bitcoin is mined.
Then pause. Sorry, and this is based on Altar reports and that kind of information.
No. Let's back up.
Okay. All right.
Let's talk about this. In 2008, I ran across an obscure paper that was written by a guy by the name of, nominally by the name of Satoshi Nakamoto. And this is the fellow that invented the algorithm, the idea that is Bitcoin. And it is truly that. It is an algorithm. It's nothing more. It's just an idea. And he said, if you did things this way and you came up with this and so on. And then over the course of 2009, some people started developing code for it. And we started getting the first Bitcoin mining. Now, Satoshi's idea is the following. We need what's known as a free currency. That is a currency that does not have debt attached to it. So if I go and I get a dollar from my bank, there's all kinds of debt attached to it. There's debt attached in the form of our, quote, national debt, because we're the Zionist bankers create the money from nothing and then lend it to us for interest.
That's right.
So there's other debts there, too, the processing fees and all of this sort of thing. So if I go to get a dollar, one unit of currency, I really am in terms of purchasing power. Instantly, I'm only having, you know, 92 cents worth of a proportion of that purchasing power because of the fees and interest I have to pay on this. So the Satoshi said that, you know, as part of the evolution of currency, and basically he piggybacks on the idea or restates the idea that, you know, as part of the evolution of the internet, we must reinvent currency so that it is fair to the people and allows for growth. Now, you have to understand that the we actually ran into a situation in the late 70s and early 80s globally where corporations decided that the analog phone system and analog television systems were limiting their potential for growth. Also limiting their potential for control, but they didn't tell us about that. They just talked about the growth and how we would have a happier future if we all went digital. And so we did. Now, in going digital, we opened ourselves up to some stuff, very negative, all the NSA and all of this kind of stuff,
right?
The spying. However, we've also opened ourselves up to a radically new future of peer-to-peer. And we've been demonstrating that, you know, because the people invented email and all of the other aspects of this, you've got creativity run amok with people writing code all the time, trying to come up with the next greatest app. It's a global competition. The creativity is truly just exploding. And one of the things that we need to facilitate that is this idea of a free currency. With a free currency, we should also have the ability to know that it's defined and it can't be artificially or deliberately inflated to nothing, which is what's happening with all the fiat currencies of the world now as they do their quantitative easing, which is another way of saying race to the bottom in terms of depreciating value. And so he said, well, let's put a finite peg on the number of these critters that can exist, and then natural human avarice and acquisitiveness will come into play, and they'll always escalate up to a certain point where they'll become more or less stable in terms of price once there is an equitable division based on the power structures of the world at the time. Okay, so he's not saying everybody's going to get an equal share of Bitcoins. He's just saying that there will come a time when there is an equitable division based on who has the power and the wealth in the planet, mm-hmm. and things will become stable. Yeah. And the prices of the Bitcoins will become stable. But until then, they are bound to escalate because of the demographics involved. Because here's the thing, okay? Within the demographics involved, there's only going to be 21 million Bitcoins. So just let's take another aside and look at gold. We could use gold in lieu of fiat currency, but there's only 2 billion ounces of gold that are available. There have been 4 billion ounces dug up, but only 2 billion ounces to go around to the planet. That wouldn't even satisfy the Indian population or the Chinese to 1 ounce each.
Right.
So that can't work. Plus, it's heavy. You can't send it through the mail reliably and all of these kind of other issues. So we came up with a digital solution. And basically, we reinvented money the same way we reinvented email, Skype, and all of this stuff. So this is money over internet, okay?
And why 21 million? Is this just a number they came up with? Is there reasoning behind that?
No, there's a mathematical reason behind this, okay? So let me explain a little bit about Bitcoin itself.
Sure.
To the novice here.
Yeah.
Bitcoin works because of a cooperative effort by all these PCs and servers that are hooked up to the internet. Bitcoin requires absolutely unique numbers to exist. Numbers that have an algorithm that is based loosely on prime numbers, okay? And so each Bitcoin is uniquely identified. Each subset of a Bitcoin involved in a transaction is uniquely identified. And so it is trustless because you always know where the Bitcoins are. You don't have to worry about someone lying to you about what your account is in a bank, for instance. You can look at your account and see and track your history of the Bitcoin from the very first time you got involved all the way through at any time you want. And so basically it's a currency that maintains, it's smart currency, it maintains its own internal accounting, but it keeps it private because it doesn't identify itself to you in any way, shape, or form. If you choose not to identify that you have a Bitcoin, no one will ever know. The Bitcoin itself won't tell you. But Bitcoin provides a trustless accounting, it provides ease of transactions, and it does so because all of these computers are on the internet all the time mining for these numbers. And by mining, that's a computer euphemism term for sitting there and running their floating point operations, their flops, against a prime number algorithm to come up with these numbers that Bitcoin's uses in its backbone, if you will, to generate the unique IDs that go into each and every one of the Bitcoin transactions. That sort of makes sense?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. So they're out there generating all these flops, all these floating point operations to develop new prime numbers, and that supports the backbone. But what else also supports the backbone are all the wallets doing all the transactions, because in a certain extent, they're also supplying all the electricity and this sort of thing. So now the miners are doing proof of work to generate a Bitcoin. So they're actually having to work their butts off to develop the algorithms, get the hardware in place, buy electricity to run it. So there's a cost of effort, just like there's the cost of effort of getting off the couch, getting the shovel, going out in the woods, finding the gold, digging it out of the ground.
Right.
Okay. So it's the same kind of thing at that stage. Mm. Only gold's pretty dumb. Okay. Gold doesn't know who it is. Gold can't keep track of its sub-transactions. It can't provide you with an accounting. You can't transfer gold back and forth across the internet. And so Bitcoin eliminates a lot of the negativity about gold and silver. Now, in my way of thinking, in the future, just as an aside, we will end up with a globally with a system that is basically precious metals and precious stones and resources backed cryptocurrencies. And it'll work where, you know, you use a cryptocurrency to do settlement between people that are removed from each other and then settle things locally by buying gold and silver with those cryptocurrencies. This is as the fiats disappear. But getting back to Bitcoin, Bitcoin itself as a backbone runs very much like the internet. It runs across the IP addresses. It's got its own subspace, if you will. And a lot of people object the first time they load a Bitcoin wallet on their PC because they stop it after a couple of hours and they say, this has taken forever. Well, it's because it's got to load this blockchain in its entirety once onto your PC, and it's doing so against all of the other demands on the blockchain across the internet. So it can be rather slow. Hmm. So for instance, even in 2011, when I set up this PC here and I loaded a Bitcoin wallet on it, it took like probably 7 to 8 hours to load that wallet.
Jeez.
Now I hear if you choose the original Bitcoin wallet, which is called BTC or something along those lines, and you download it, all Bitcoin is open source. So there's people developing wallets and all kinds of layers on top of it and doing stuff with it like mad, because it's open and transparent and you can see what's going on. But now I think if you load the older, slower wallets, it can take 24 hours for these to load because there's so much transactions going on in the Bitcoin space. there are ways to address this as we go forward in the future, and a lot of people are indeed doing that, and some of them are attempting to do it as a commercial operation and to make a little few satoshis in the way. A satoshi, by the way, is a fractional part of a Bitcoin. And it, you know, so it's also like pennies and dollars.
Okay.
Or, you know, that's that sort of thing, pence and pounds. It was just named after Satoshi Nakamura in honorarium for the effort. Even though the Nakamura is an allegorical figure, and it might have been a committee, it might have been this wild Russian mathematician that everybody points fingers to, or it might have been Max Keiser for all we know that came up with Bitcoin.
So no one really knows. No one knows who.
Yeah,
it is.
Those who know aren't saying that's the case.
Yeah, right.
So anyway, so here we are with Bitcoin. A few years back, they started mining it. Wasn't worth much. You know, really, the only people that cared about it were a few obscure gamers. Because they were into artificial currencies within their simulated games and so on. And so they started getting into it because it was sort of natural to them. And they were the very, very, very first early adopters. Now, I was out there and I didn't get into mining because I had my own operations and stuff going here. But I considered it for a while when I came across it because it was very nascent. We just had, I think, two or three miners actually on the net at that stage. But I knew that for me, that wasn't the position I needed to do to be in relative to Bitcoin, because this was the game changer. I knew it was, and ever since I've had it on my site since like 2010 or 11 or something, where I accepted Bitcoins, I've always continuously stated that this is an end the Fed strategy. To use Bitcoin is a way to sidestep all of the terrible evils that the Zionist central banks have imposed on the planet. And let's bear in mind, there were no world wars until we had the first central banks set up. So, you know, that really is a telling statistic right there. However evil the planet may have been, however terrible climate problems might have been in forcing, the Mongols to invade Europe, we did not have world war organized death festivals until there were central banks trying to get people to basically to go into debt to pay for them.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, here's what I see going on. We wouldn't have had Vietnam as a war. We would have crashed our country. It bankrupted us in 1968, and the Tet Offensive was the first sign of that. A lot of people in our country here that went through the Tet Offensive will recognize one thing. Our guys got the absolute hell kicked out of them, and it was a logistics and supply issue. There were bases that had not been resupplied for actual months ahead of the Tet Offensive, because we had run into the beginning of the financial crisis that led Nixon to take us off the gold standard and close the gold window and open up the petrodollar window with Saudi Arabia. So we were that close in 68, and they kept it going by stopping the changing money from gold to oil. And now that's run out. We've hit peak oil, and it's no wonder the universe has provided us with Bitcoin just when the powers that be are going to ratchet everything down now that peak oil is here, and they won't be able to run their debt machine off of oil anymore.
Interesting. So let me ask you a couple of more things here before we wrap things up with the first hour, Cliff. You said that basically you can see the complete flow of every exchange that has been done with every, I mean, does every unit of Bitcoin has a unique identification that you can track?
Correct. And if you split them up into smaller units, you get new unique identifiers and you can track those.
See, that's pretty interesting, because I've wondered about that in terms of money. I think that in itself, just looking at that data, will be like a fascinating, you know.
I've got it running on my site right now. There's a fascinating little app. If you go over to Half Past Human and you scroll down into the little sidebars, you'll see a thing where it says Fiat Leak. Okay. And Fiat Leak is a little application that shows you Bitcoins moving in real time into money moving in real time into Bitcoin from fiat currencies. And they're doing it by a combination of monitoring the exchanges and the backbone.
Interesting. Yeah, I was actually, and then I clicked into that, not too long ago, looking at that. That's pretty, pretty amazing stuff. Now, so let's say, maybe we can just take this in the last 5 minutes or so, if possible. If someone just wants to buy, how is it done? Where did they go? The easiest way you can explain it, Cliff.
You're really lucky if you live outside the United States, because most of the exchanges to buy are outside the United States. You can go to just look up Bitcoin Exchange. And if you want to buy local, almost every place anymore, you can get access to Craigslist or local classifieds, and you'll see people selling Bitcoins. Whether you meet them up, they send them across on the smartphone and you hand them currency or buy them a coffee or whatever.
And that's it.
Yeah, that's it. It's not that difficult to buy the Bitcoins. the prices are going up. You're going to have there are places in the United States, for instance, you can go to places like Coinbase.com. Okay, but the exchanges that exist now, by the way, are not markets. And here's a difference. In a market, you want to buy a stock, you go to a stock broker. Well, the stock broker nominally says that he's going to match you up with a seller. Fact is, they own that stock that they sell you. They've already purchased it in anticipation of your needing it, so to speak, right? And in fact, over half of all the stocks are counterfeit even. They can just create them as they wish and take your money. And there's no way of knowing. So within Bitcoin, that doesn't exist. You've got a situation where the uniqueness of Bitcoin allows the ability to overcome those kind of limitations, and you get away from that level of transaction. But there are no markets. The Coinbase does not own Bitcoins to sell you. They actually have to match you up. So what they do is they set up a queue. So you set up an account, you transfer money from your, or give them permission to take money out of your bank account to buy Bitcoins, and then they put you in a queue. They basically say, take a number and wait. And, you know, it's all automated, and they go buy the Bitcoins on your behalf, but you have to agree ahead of time to pay whatever is the going price is at that point, or set a limit as to how much you're going to pay. And at this point, people are just simply not setting limits. They're simply paying it because there's, you know, let me tell you three really nasty, terrible statistics for the powers that be. And this will be chilling to any of the minions that are actually listening to this when it hits them, okay? And here's the statistics, and it'll sum it up real quickly. Bitcoin came into existence in 2009, so we've barely had just a few years of it. You've seen the price escalation already recently. Now, here's the statistics. Most Chinese people have never heard of Bitcoin. Most Hindu people have never heard of Bitcoin. Most of the people on the planet have never heard of Bitcoin. And yep. This is an idea that's taking off.
Yep.
So what's the price going to be when 1% of the Chinese people have heard of it and half of them want it? What's that price going to be when I can give you some estimates as to what it must be at certain specific points. So for instance, there's this manipulated market now called the Forex, which is the foreign exchange market where banks steal from each other and try and rape and pillage countries. And they are successful in raping and pillaging countries and stealing from each other at this Forex market. Totally manipulated. Okay, and it is a huge market, currency swapping back and forth. If Bitcoin, which will never, ever, ever trade on Forex, it's impossible for it to trade as a currency on Forex for a lot of different reasons. But if it took 0.1% of today's Forex market, it would have to be $42,000 each Bitcoin.
Wait a minute, say that again.
if Bitcoin right now were trading at a volume level that was 0.1% of the volume that went through the Forex today, mm-hmm. each Bitcoin would have to be worth $42,000.
Wow. What is it at today then? What's the exchange rate?
I can tell you actually in real time. Hang on, let me grab my glasses here and swap over to another screen. Yep. There's a dozen different exchanges. So when you say the exchange rate, it's kind of like, well, where are we talking?
Okay.
But let's say there's an aggregate, and right at the moment in the US dollars, it's varying from 695 to 830, depending on which exchange is selling and buying. In Chinese currency, it's much more stable, and it's at about 5,105 CNY, and it's still rising, 5,111, 5,120. So it's rising very rapidly in the Chinese currency and not dropping back down. We see it drop back down in American currency, in the dollars, as those people with Bitcoin sell them off to the Chinese and others who want to buy them and take a profit, so to speak. They'll sell them at a specific price, and then that's reported here. But mostly the Chinese are buying. They're simply not selling, and thus the price is escalating. A real telling statistic there is that we're now at over 5,000, and what, it was barely a week ago we'd crossed, or 2 weeks ago we'd crossed 1,000 CNY, Chinese National Yuan, to the Bitcoin. And most Chinese have not heard of Bitcoin yet.
Yeah.
Most Americans haven't heard of it. How many Swedes know about it? Do you have a Bitcoin wallet? Few.
No, I don't.
You're an early adopter guy.
Well, you know? Exactly. I want to get into it. That's why I'm asking you so many questions about it now. But
here's the thing.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Bitcoin in a practical sense then.
Mm-hmm.
It's open source. You can download Bitcoin wallets just by going and doing a search for them. Get a good one. There's a bunch of different kinds, multi-bit if you're English speaker, but there's many different native language wallets being written and so on. There's the original one called Bitcoin Wallet, and that's got an interesting thing because there's this add-on to the Bitcoin Wallet, the very original one that takes a long time to load, and this add-on is called Armory, and Armory allows you to print off a backup of all your Bitcoin numbers. So if your PC had a meteorite come on down and take it out, destroy it completely, you'd be able to take that list and go and recreate your wallet and type in all the numbers and recreate your access to those Bitcoins so you wouldn't lose them. So that's a good thing, is to be able to do these backups in non-digital formats.
Interesting. All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's something to definitely look into if you're not into it yet. And I'm certainly going to try to do some of my homework on this to be able to get some. But
they label Swedish currency as SEK, right?
That's correct. Yeah.
Okay, because you guys are at now 5440.26 SEK to the Bitcoin.
Say that again. How much was it?
5440.26 in the last trade.
26. Okay. Yeah, that's pretty good. That's quite a bit. Yeah, 5,440.6 Swedish crowns. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's just for one Bitcoin.
Correct.
And that used to be obviously very, very much lower, let's say 2 years ago.
Yeah. 2 years ago, when I first started getting into Bitcoin and started yelling at everybody, Bitcoin, 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 it was $4 US.
Wow.
Yeah. So then it broke through 40 and everybody got excited. And I started yelling even harder because I knew it was going to break through 400. Now I'm yelling at everybody because I know it's going to break through 4,000.
Well,
because
most
Chinese and most Hindus and most of the people on the planet haven't heard of it, and it's a damn fine idea.
Well, I have to buy some Satoshi before I go for the full Bitcoin there.
Yeah, it's getting expensive.
Yeah, it is expensive.
That's the beauty of it, though, is that it's infinitely divisible.
Yeah.
So we will indeed, unfortunately, there was no way, and there was actually a big concerted effort in the early days of the Bitcoin to figure out a way to make it equitable, so that a bunch of gamers didn't end up being, the richest people on the planet. And actually, the richest people on the planet will be vied for by this small alpaca farm in Iowa in central United States, because they were the very first commercial operation that accepted Bitcoin way back when Bitcoins were worth less than a dollar, and they would sell you alpaca socks for Bitcoins. And you had to do something with them. Some of these people had thousands of them, so they bought everybody they knew alpaca socks.
Lana's going to love that. She loves alpacas and llamas, so that's cool.
Well, so these people are going to end up being super rich because they've been selling alpaca socks for Bitcoins for years now.
Interesting.
Just a curiosity. But they actually did, social engineering-wise, there was a big concerted effort to try and figure out some way to distribute them in a fashion that would be more equitable. But nobody could come up with anything, that didn't benefit some basically undeserved group. So they just decided, hell, let's just allow the universe to decide who's the undeserved people that are going to benefit.
All right.
Might as well be you guys.
Yeah, well, exactly. Well, that's very good. Well, let's pick this up here in the second half here then, Cliff. Give us your website and tell us again how people can get a hold of your Alta reports as well. You're continuing to put those out regularly, correct?
Continuing to put them out irregularly based on what's going on here really is what it amounts to. Plus, we've run into some real software issues, the bandwidth limitations that you were discussing.
Yeah.
The guy who runs my server lives on the backside of one of those.
Oh, no.
Jesus. Yeah, we've had issues negotiating contracts and stuff, but he's moving, so that'll change. But we're putting them out irregularly. The site is halfpasthuman.com, and the reports are ALTA, and that's for asymmetric linguistic trend analysis. And you can just use a PayPal button, but I'd prefer to receive a couple of Satoshis. But here's the deal. The price on the reports is rising so fast that I'm not going to keep resetting the value in Bitcoins. So adjust the Bitcoin, the Satoshis down. And if I don't think it's fair, I'll let you know.
All right. Okay. Halfpasthuman.com will get you more information. I'm going to ask you a little bit more about the latest Delta report. So I also want to ask him about Comet Izon and a few other items as well. So stay with us, everybody. We'll be right back with more. I'd like to come and see you, but what's it worth to you? You'll make it easy. Won't get me low. I've been a wreck so long, it's hard to pull it back. But I'm on it, and I want. And before we proceed to discuss Bitcoin and the Pneumo, the origin myth that's retold about the Dogon tribe with Cliff High, I can just let you know that we have some interesting upcoming guests here next on Red Ice Radio. Andreas Bachmeier, Judy Byington, John Whitehead, Louise Proud, and Anthony Peake, to name a few. You can sign up for a membership at redicemembers.com and continue to listen to the second hour with Cliff High and all our previous programs. All right, we'll talk to you after the break. Thank you for listening.